Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Wednesday, November 6, 2019. Corruption is ruining South Sudan's financial system, according to outside finance experts.
If you don't have the powers of managing the foreign reserves, then definitely you don't have any power to manage the exchange rate.
And South Sudan promises to pay off its millions of dollars in overdue membership fees to the EAC.
From now on, I think they will be paying in installments. I really don't know how much will be paid. It depends on our situation.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Financial experts meeting in Juba say South Sudan's public financial system has been damaged by politicians who continue to misuse public funds. A finance expert with the Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission, or JMEC, that's the body overseeing implementation of South Sudan's peace agreement, says government officials must respect the country's financial laws, and when they don't, they must be held accountable. Dimo Silva Aurelio reports for VOA from Juba.
Experts and financial authorities in Juba say a lack of accountability and transparency in South Sudan's public financial sector is a major problem that has to be addressed before a unity government is formed so that mismanagement does not occur during the transitional period. This week's meeting in the capital is part of a process to amend the constitution to include provisions of the revitalized peace agreement. Gichira Kibara, chairperson of the National Constitutional Amendment Committee, the body tasked to amend South Sudan's laws, says the panel is looking at ways to address inadequate transparency on the budget, oversight and participation, and poor budget execution and fiscal discipline, along with
failure of the legislature to scrutinize government expenditure and non-compliance with some international standards, such as international public sector accounting standards and international financial reporting standards.
Thompson Fonten, a finance expert and deputy chief of staff and strategy at JMEC, says South Sudan's financial sector is broken.
People are not held responsible. The Ministry of Finance may have one set of rules in place as to how the monies may be allocated, but on the other side, another ministry might not observe those rules, and then you have a problem if these are not done.
Fonten says the only way South Sudan can improve its financial management is by carrying out regular audits. South Sudan Central Bank Governor Dier Tong Ngor, who heads the Bank of South Sudan, says government officials constantly interfere in his operations.
If you don't have the powers of managing the foreign reserves, then definitely you don't have any power to manage the exchange rate.
Ngor says the government often borrows huge amounts of money from the central bank to finance a large deficit which strips the institution of its foreign reserves.
Us in the central bank, with almost our 9 years of experience since existence, we have also come up with a lot of issues that need to be reviewed. And we stand ready to engage in these discussions with the NCAC and all the other stakeholders.
John Machek, deputy chairperson of the South Sudan Bureau of Statistics, says the perpetual financial mismanagement in South Sudan has nothing to do with a lack of financial laws, but rather a lack of respect for existing laws.
I contend that South Sudan actually has in place so many beautiful laws, but I feel that there's no will to implement them. The laws are not respected, and therefore makes them unworkable.
Finance Minister Salvatore Garang indicated he is ready to improve reforms in his ministry recommended by the finance experts.
We know that public finance reforms involves identifying gaps in the existing system and making the necessary changes if necessary.
The experts also say the public must be involved in the budget process so that citizens know how their tax dollars and government revenues are being spent. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
Meanwhile, South Sudan is trying to assure other East African Community member states that it's doing all it can to fulfill its obligations to the regional bloc, including paying off its millions of dollars in overdue membership fees. Last year, the EAC gave Juba a grace period of 18 months to meet its annual obligations. That grace period expired at the end of September, and South Sudan has yet to pay up. Viola Elias has the story for VOA from Juba.
Momo Athiang, South Sudan Undersecretary for East African Affairs, admits South Sudan has been in the midst of a financial crisis for some time, but he says that will not stop the country from paying its EAC dues. The EAC secretariat threatened to suspend South Sudan from the regional bloc for failing to pay its annual contribution. Last month, Juba paid $3 million of the $27 million it owes the EAC. Athiang says South Sudan Finance and Economic Planning Ministry has come up with a schedule to pay off the $24 million.
From now on, I think they will be paying in installments. I really don't know how much would be paid. It depends on our situation.
Many South Sudanese complain their country has not benefited from its membership in the regional bloc, but Athiang says that is because they do not understand how the EAC functions. He insists EAC benefits are numerous, including university scholarship for South Sudanese students and visa-free entry to Rwanda, Tanzania, and other African countries.
As soon as we were admitted in the community, we had to send 9 members of parliament. Is that not employment? And they will be representing our country there in all areas of cooperation. Is that not a benefit? We have a judge in the East African Court of Justice. Sooner than later, we'll have another judge in the appeal court. That one is in the Innocence Division. We have also a liaison officer at the level of brigadier who is representing our interests.
Kim Guy, a lawmaker representing South Sudan in the East African Legislative Assembly, is urging authorities in Juba to honor their commitment to the East African community.
Let us move forward, and that is how the country can go. And instead, we come and blame the others, or we are harassed in the EAC on behalf of the country. I urge my colleagues and all the honorable members from South Sudan National Assembly that they can summon the Auditor General and Minister of Finance to present report before the end of any financial year.
2 months ago, the EAC Council of Ministers informed the regional lawmaking body in Arusha it will decide the fate of South Sudan membership in the EAC. The East African newspaper quotes Aden Mohammed, acting chairman of the EAC Council of Ministers and Kenyan Cabinet Secretary for the EAC, as saying the Council of Ministers will meet later this month to discuss overdue membership dues from all partner states, including South Sudan. A decision on whether to apply sanction or suspend South Sudan membership will be at the top of the council agenda before the EAC Heads of State Summit later this month. For VOA News, I am Viola Elias in Juba.
Some Juba residents say top South Sudanese officials, including military and police officials, use their positions to grab land from civilians, something they say is rampant in the capital. Winnie Serino has more for VOA from Juba.
Juba State Governor Augustino Jadala says President Salva Kiir issued several directives warning land grabbers in Juba to stop taking land by force owned by citizens. Speaking in Arabic, Jadala says his office is working to resolve land disputes around Juba town, but did not elaborate on how his office will address the land disputes.
And Anna Muzakir, WMN, what were the orders?
President gave orders to the Minister of Interior so that the minister can look into issue of people who grab other people's land. So I think our president has to look into both small and bigger issues on what is happening in the country, especially in the area of Juba.
35-year-old Tongo James says his brother's land in High Seminary, a residential area, was grabbed by a police officer who claims the property belongs to his late father. James says his brother has lived on the land for more than 20 years.
The court decided to give my brother's land to someone else who had the documents of this land. That person, he claimed to have bought this land from housing, regardless of not knowing the place, even whether it is vacant or not. Yet my brother had been living in this place for so long, more than 20 years. And he even have part of the document.
Jem says his brother could not register the land in court because it was registered in the courts under a different name. He says a group of armed officers were sent to demolish the structures his brother built on the disputed land. Jem says his efforts to seek a court order to secure the property did not succeed and the police arrested him.
The officer then told us that, look, if there's no letter that comes from court, you can stay with us 10, 20 years or stay forever. But if a letter comes today or tomorrow, you will be released. So we became pretty astonished and we didn't know what to do. Only to ask to pass on this information through those who are visiting us to tell them that the story inside here is that we are imprisoned indefinitely and with no charges. So we stayed there for 3 days and it was the third day that we got released.
Jem says he feels let down by the judiciary system in South Sudan. Rajaf County Commissioner Frederick Lako says many families in his county lost their ancestral properties to land grabbers. Speaking in Arabic, Lako is calling directly on President Salva Kiir to intervene.
People of Rajaf are not going to get that peace because all of their lands are being grabbed, and those people who are grabbing those lands are our people from the organized forces. I want to inform you that our land is also being grabbed by criminals, and there are those in the government who support these criminals.
Robert Henry Badri, a lawyer with a group called Screen of Rights, says most land grabbers in Juba are members of the armed forces. He says the legal system is not fair to complainants whose court cases can last forever.
Our courts are very slow. Cases can take years to conclude. People go, litigants go, people with grievances, with land grievances, open cases, but then these cases take a long time, and sometimes they get frustrated in the middle, and the cost of affording legal services, that is, say, payment of legal counsel, is extremely challenged.
And Badri says the Court of Appeal hardly functions at all. He says the Land Act stipulates that ownership is through possession of land, and if the government wants to take the land for development, then the government must compensate the landowner. He says if a person has a title deed, that document proves legal ownership of the land in South Sudan. For VOA News, I am Winnie Serino in Juba.
Tune to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. A man scheduled for execution in South Sudan has written a book about his experience as an advisor to a top political leader there. Find out more when we return.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
are you more of a spender or a saver?
I am more of a spender because I like to do steady business, buying and selling quick ones than to be paid monthly.
I save a lot. I'm a saver because mostly when I want to get something, I have to keep money for a very long time to get it. So I don't always spend money. I save and then plan ahead.
I must learn from now how to save money because maybe in future I will be a governor, so that I can know how to save money for my country.
I'll be more of a saver, but I can't save what I don't earn. And you're also an African, really. You see how income and expenditure works. You see our budgeting style that our economy has. That is why I'm not in a suit.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011. You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. A former South South African soldier who escaped execution in South Sudan last year, is out with a book entitled No Justice, No Mercy, A South Sudan Story. William Endley describes the political turmoil in South Sudan and his role as advisor to rebel leader Riek Machar. He also describes his life at South Sudan's National Security Detention Center in Juba, where he says political prisoners depended on South Sudan in Focus for accurate information.
When I was taken to the detention facility in the Blue House, that is one of the first things one of the NSS operators said to me was, in this place there's no justice and there's no mercy. And I've never forgotten those words. They've stayed with me and they will remain with me for the rest of my life. The
South Sudanese would say, President King, pardon you. That was a sign of mercy.
So I've heard this before, but if there was any mercy and any justice, I would not have been arrested in the first place. I would not have gone through the sham trial that I went through. You know, out of the 10 times I appeared in court before I was sentenced, 5 times nothing took place. 2 of the times I appeared, I had no legal representation, so there was no justice. When I was writing the chapter on the court case, the evidence that I was training the SPLM-IO was 2 books. One of them was dated 1912, the other one was dated 1923. And it happened to be on the South African Defence Force dress regulations for that year. And this is probably why the court still has not released my property back to me. And I've applied through my lawyer, but we've received no positive news or answers on the property that they took from me.
Let's look at the experience you had at the Blue House. It appears like you were inside the Blue House, but well informed. Where were you getting your information from?
Well, John, that's a very good and a very leading question. As I said to Dr. Riek when I met him in Khartoum a few months ago, the mistake that was made, I should either have been released immediately or just disappeared like what happened to Dong and Ogri immediately. The fact is I had people inside it that I got to know, both within the system and my fellow detainees. And what people also don't realize, many of the national security operatives and members are themselves locked up there, and if you locked up for a period of time, you tend to communicate and you tend to become friends. And I got a lot of information from them and from some of the people who worked both in the office and in the detention facility.
Were you allowed to access the media, like radio, television?
That was one of the highlights. Initially, I was not allowed to do that. I was not allowed newspapers or writing materials. But eventually, I was able to get hold of a radio. And one of the highlights every evening was to listen to the Voice of America's Focus on South Sudan. And we would gather in a communal cell where there would be a radio, and 8 to 10 of us would sit and listen to the headlines and try catch up on what was happening. Because obviously there was a blanket on what we were hearing and a lot of rumors and a lot of misinformation and disinformation. So the Voice of America played a pivotal role in telling us what was going on, you know, in the outside world and the attention that we as political prisoners or detainees were receiving from you guys. So it's one of the highlights in the book. I write about the media and I've mentioned you by name and the role that you play in keeping people informed.
This book, the price is around 450 rand, quite expensive. I would expect you to do a charity here because you're informing the world.
John, yes, unfortunately I have a contract with publishers, and you know, it goes about the printing costs and the color photographs, which pushed up the price. And the book is over 400 pages long, so it's a lot of work that went into it. It's at the printer. It'll be distributed on the 23rd of November.
And after this, what is your next move? I mean, it appears like you're busy in South Africa.
I've been invited as a guest speaker to many forums. A lot of them are former veterans, military veterans, which I just completed down in Cape Town last week. I'm in Johannesburg, where I'll be addressing a group of approximately 300 veterans from the South African military, you know, from the police, the prisons, the whole lot. And, you know, I'm using this as a roadshow to enlighten people about what not only happened to me, but what is still happening in South Sudan.
Looks like the experience you had in South Sudan shaped you into an ambassador for the people of South Sudan. Is that the right description?
That's very correct, John. As I said, and I think I've told you before, you know, the humanity, the hospitality, and sheer goodness of the average South Sudanese is what attracted me and why I took a job offer to return to South Sudan in 2012. And besides all these experiences, my opinion has not changed. I just hope that things were looking better on the horizon, which unfortunately is not happening at this point in time. But I support South Sudan and I will continue to do so.
That is retired South African Colonel William Enley, a former security advisor to rebel leader Riek Machar. Enley's book will be in bookstores in late November. He was speaking with my colleague John Tanza via WhatsApp from Cape Town, South Africa, earlier today. Public meetings and celebrations took place across Cameroon today to mark the 37th anniversary of President Paul Biya's time in power and one-year anniversary of his last inauguration. The opposition tried to organize protests against Biya, whom they say has plunged Cameroon into economic and social chaos. But the government banned the demonstrations. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports for VOA from Yaoundé.
Supporters of Paul Biya and his CPDM party gathered in towns and villages across Cameroon Wednesday and chanted this song, which says the president is strong enough to continue to lead Cameroon. The CPDM organized the rallies to show the people's commitment to Biya, who at 86 is Africa's oldest ruler. Jonathan Frew, CPDM party president for the northwestern town of Santa, says Biya has done much for Cameroon.
The number of schools have multiplied, which give an opportunity for every child to go to school. We have access to medical facilities all around us. We have seen the evolution from one party to multi-party. We think that there's every reason that we have to celebrate.
But people on the streets of the capital, Yaoundé, openly discuss whether Biya is still able to lead the country. 30-year-old teacher Ngwa Collins says he has known only one president whom he thinks is growing weaker.
This year he had to travel to China and Russia, but he did not go. He instead traveled to Geneva for his health care, meaning that he is tired and his health cannot permit him to continue. He has to leave the scene in an honorable manner.
Biya was sworn in for the first time as president of Cameroon in 1982, following the resignation of the Central African State's first president, Ahmadou Ahidjo. Biya has been declared the victor of every presidential election since. In the most recent poll in October 2018, official results showed Biya winning with 71% of the vote. Maurice Kamto of the CRM party, who finished a distant second with 14%, accused Biya of stealing victory, but the court denied the challenge. The CRM sought permission to hold protest this week against what the party considers election fraud, a poor economy, and Biya's overstay in power, but the request was rejected by the government. Rights groups, including Human Rights Watch, have often accused Cameroon's government of oppressing dissent. The activists also accused the military of using excessive force as it battles armed separatist groups in the English-speaking northwest and southwest regions and Boko Haram fighters in the far north. Elvis Ngolengole is director of the CPDM Academy, where people are taught the virtues of the ruling party. He says the accusations are meant to destabilize the Biya government. He says the party recognizes that there are problems in Cameroon.
The 37th anniversary does not ignore the fact that people are feeling bad in the northwest and southwest, who have lost thousands of our brothers and sisters, that Boko Haram is killing innocent men and women and children. Our party is compassionate enough for this in the face of adversity. As a human society, we shouldn't lose sight of hope.
Biya has been in power for more than 40 years in Cameroon, 7 of them as prime minister, 37 as president. In 2008, he removed term limits from the constitution, allowing him to serve indefinitely. He is now the second longest serving president in Africa after his neighbor Teodoro Obiang Nguema of Equatorial Guinea. When his new term is finished, he will be 93 years old. Moki Edwin Kinzeka For VOA News, Yaoundé.
We turn now to Zimbabwe, where police today blocked a sanctioned march against the government by civil servants who say skyrocketing inflation has incapacitated them financially. The march was meant to pressure the government to review their salaries. Reporter Kodzai Zvinivashi has more.
Robson Cherry is a teacher and secretary general of the Amalgamated Rural Teachers Union of Zimbabwe. He explains why he came to join his peers today.
We are here marching and demanding a living wage. We are saying to the government we are incapacitated. And we have come here in our numbers to show that we are really much incapacitated. So we are here demanding the government to pay us a living wage, which is supposed to cater for our needs. So far we can't even afford the basic needs.
The turnout for the march has been poor amid an overwhelming police presence. Despite approving the march, police barricaded the streets, making sure the marchers were limited and could not reach government offices to present a petition. David Zatsunga is the Apex Council spokesperson. He explains the true extent of civil servants' incapacitation.
We are saying to government, salaries of civil servants should be benchmarked against the independent rate. In other words, we should take the $475 that we were earning last year and then multiply that by the independent rate.
Zatsunga says when they were earning in US dollars, the lowest paid civil servant would take home $475. Now that same worker takes home the equivalent of $30. He says the situation has become desperate, with many basic needs out of reach. He adds the dialogue with government has not been fruitful. Minister of Information, Monica Mutsangwa, briefed the media after the latest meeting with civil servants yesterday.
In the latest meeting that took place this afternoon, it has been agreed as follows. Government does not dispute the need to give a cost of living adjustment to its workers, but was faced with various competing national demands.
Mutsangwa says buying grain to help in ongoing drought, an agricultural input support scheme, bonuses for civil servants, and purchases of buses to provide subsidized public transport are some of the pressing issues that the government is trying to handle. Union leaders say they are going to be taking a different course of action to pressure government to act. Public doctors have been staying away from work, saying they too are incapacitated. This has resulted in 77 of them being relieved of their duties by government. The march leaders say they also will be making a report with the International Labour Organization on how they were blocked despite permission to march. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zvinavashe from Harare.
And that is our show for this Wednesday. We leave you with the song Tarazina by Setona. Listening to Setona with the song Tarazina. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. Thanks for being here. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from The Voice of America.
ياكلوا جوانج بسيرتي بيجي في